Hello and welcome to the Honest Meeple podcast. My name is Tom and you will probably best know me from my Instagram, also by the same name, the Honest Meeple. I myself am a board game fanatic and I've been running the Instagram now for about 6 months, but I thought I would try my hand at podcasting. I'm very much somebody who likes to talk about board gaming a lot, and I thought, why not share it with you? Decision made in part because, of course, I am, as many of you will, listen to Shut Up and Sit Down. They're a fantastic podcast. You've also got the Dice Tower that do a brilliant podcast. And I think it's a great idea to connect with fans and just have a bit of time to talk about what you love. This episode, being the first one, I thought I would discuss exactly how all of this started. Obviously, saying this being my board game obsession, it's definitely a real hobby for me now, as it is for many of you. So I'm going to discuss how it all began and how it developed over time. I'm also going to share with you, I hope to share with you in these podcast features. So this week I'm just going to talk about what I've played, whether there's anything new. I've definitely played some new stuff and some classics as well, so we'll talk about those. Over the weeks, who knows? I'm hoping this will be a regular occurrence. At the moment, I'll be looking at doing them just monthly. But who knows? It may increase. I don't want to increase it so much so that we lose the quality, but we'll see how we go. So as always, I'll really welcome your feedback. So if you feel like you want to feedback, if you want me to talk about something, if you simply want me to shout you out on these podcasts, pop an email over to contact@honestmeeple.co.uk. That's contact@honestmeeple.co.uk. Pop me an email, give me some feedback, give me suggestions, whatever you want, send it across and I'll be sure to read every single one of them. So I guess we better get started then. On how it all started for me in the fantastic hobby of board gaming. Now, I think we'll start back at the very beginning when I was a child, 6, 7 years old. I got board games for Christmas. And saying board games, I mean the simple classics, Monopoly, Cluedo, the ones that you don't really talk about but you know exist. And of course, every time I got one of these board games at Christmas, I would be eager to get it out of the box, unwrap everything, see what's inside. I remember one year receiving an edition of Battleships. Now, some of you may remember this. I believe it was MB. I can't remember. I can't remember for the life of me what MB stands for. From memory, it's Milton Bradley, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. But obviously, they distributed Battleships, and one year they decided to really push the boat out. And they had ones where you had a submarine viewfinder and you could literally shoot at these ships and they would fly off the board, which I thought was fantastic at the time. And it was for kids. It was brilliant. But you can kind of see where I'm going. That's where kind of board gaming for me was at that time. I wasn't one. I mean, I had a Game Boy. I think I had the Nintendo, the Game Boy Advance SP, I believe it was. I had that, but I never had a PS2 or an Xbox or anything like that. It was always, my parents always tried to push me towards board games, which I'm thankful for because I'm now in a place where I absolutely adore them. It started there and it progressed and, it stayed with the classics, the ones that are popular across with everyone rather than just in the board gaming hobby itself. That carried on for many years. And it wasn't until I would say around 4 to 5 years ago that I came across the hobby. And it's a very weird way to come across it in my eyes anyway. it actually all started by me scrolling through Google Play Store. And I was scrolling through, as you do, looking for apps. And On Sale was an app that looked rather interesting to me. And that was the app Splendor. Now, many of you will know Splendor, the board game, created and distributed by Space Cowboys. It's a game of kind of gem collecting, chip collecting, and card development, where you play merchants of the Renaissance, and you have to buy mines, transport, and shops, and all of those give you prestige points, and the first 15 wins. You can even receive visits from nobles. It's a great little game. It's so simple. It's one that I like to kind of introduce to new people who aren't board gamers, who are very new to the hobby. I will always show them Splendor because it's so easy to get into, and it produces some great gameplay. That's how it started, playing this app. And I played this app for about a month. And after that month of playing, bearing in mind, I played the death out of it. I then saw an advert pop up for the actual board game. And I was intrigued. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea that it was a board game. And as soon as I saw the advert, I hopped onto Amazon and I found the board game and I bought it and I never looked back. It started. I said it was 4 or 5 years ago. Thinking about it now, it's probably more 3 years ago. And it was actually just before I started university. I found this game. I thought it was fantastic. And I played the board game to death as well as the app. And yeah, it opened this door to me, which was great. I really enjoyed it. So next on the list, from memory, was Pandemic, another classic, another brilliant gateway game for people. And Forbidden Desert. Rather odd to start on that one, but having found and discovered Board Game Geek, I soon realised, oh wow, okay, this tells me exactly how good games are. It puts a number by it, what? and Forbidden Desert was the more popular, so I went with that one. And that's a great game as well. And it was just that sense of being able to play with people, the sense of achievement. I remember Pandemic, I must have played it 3 or 4 times before we actually succeeded. And it was the best feeling in the world. And I was just hooked. The fact that I could put it away in a box and the next day get it out again and play and it would produce a different result just enthralled me. It made me so excited and so happy. Something I didn't get from video games. I'm happy to admit I absolutely loved video games. They were my life for a lot of the time. You can probably tell by the fact that I got introduced to the app. That's how I got introduced to the board game world. But yeah, it's just one of those things that you don't get from a video game. The replayability aspect, but it changes each time. With a video game, it's scripted, it's wooden, it follows that linear path, and it's really hard to find a game that doesn't do that in terms of video games. But with board games, there's so much variation, which I love. Pandemic, you always have a different outcome. Always. It's not an impossible to have the same game. And the epidemic mechanic is just beautiful. You will always hear people talking about this mechanic and how it changed board gaming. And it really did. It's such a clever way of making your life harder, I guess. but really, I think Splendor started me off, but Pandemic was the game that really kind of got me going in this hobby. And yeah, now look at me. You can go and have a look on my Instagram. I have a shelf full of games and it's growing. That's a concerning thing. So yeah, fast forward 3 years and I'm writing for Zartu Games, which is fantastic. Make sure you listen to the end because I've got a very special code to give you all to get some money off from them. But yeah, it's just that I couldn't dream of 3 years ago being where I am now and being so into the hobby. As you know, I also have my website where I blog. And yeah, it's... I think one of the biggest draws to the hobby was the community. Everyone I've met, be that online, be that in person at local game stores, be that expos, everyone is so friendly and everyone shares that passion. If you were to compare that to a video game community, it's so very different. I remember going to a video game exhibition and it was so elitist and you just felt so out of your depth. And I went to the UK Games Expo this year for the very first time. And although I'd never been, and I guess I'm still really a rookie in this hobby, I felt really comfortable and I spoke to a lot of people who had a lot of time for me. And I thank them. I remember meeting the creator of the fantastic two-player game, Fog of Love. I believe, if I get this pronunciation wrong, it's Jakob Jaskov, who created Fog of Love. I mean, he created Fog of Love because him and his partner found it hard to find games that his partner enjoyed. And he thought, what better way than to make a game that is based on a rom-com? Like, you know, it's brilliant. But we met him at the UK Games Expo. And I'm the first to admit, I'm not great with faces. Even though I'd seen his face online, I didn't realise who it was until it just clicked. And yeah, it was quite surreal because we loved the game. But there was just this element of, you know, it's cool, guys. I've made the game. Come on, what are your suggestions? What do you like about it, etc.? There was no I don't want to say that bragging is the wrong word, but I met another couple of creators and board game designers, and they're all the same. They're very, very down to earth, and I think that's fantastic. Again, it stops the elitism seeping into the hobby, and yeah, that's been another draw for me, it's brilliant. It's fantastic. But yeah, I feel I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here. But as I say, Splendor was the game that started it all off for me. And as I say, here I am now, kind of 70 games down the line. with not enough space to put them anywhere and just an ever-growing collection. And I love it. As I say, the community aspect is great, and something that I always mention when people ask why do you board game, and I say because of the community, because of the people that I am able to play with, that makes a real difference. So yeah, that's how I got started in board gaming. As I say, quite an odd one considering it was an app that got me started, but you know, we all have different stories. So, yeah, now on to the next part of the podcast. And I mentioned I'll try and do a feature each month. And I thought I'd keep it simple this month, by doing just what I've been playing for the past month, what I've enjoyed, what I would recommend to people, There's a lot of stuff I would recommend at the moment, to be fair. where do I begin? Let's start with a classic that I've returned to, only because I managed to get hold of it, and that is Love Letter. A very, very simple card game that can be played by anyone. Really dead simple to play. You take on the role of someone in trying to court the princess, and you are trying to get the love letters to the princess to show your affection. However, there are those deemed on trying to stop you. It's a great little card packet game, I believe the phrase is. I've returned to that purely on the basis that I managed to find, after much searching, because I can't seem to find it anywhere else, the premium edition of Love Letter. Now you're probably asking, why the premium edition? I asked myself that before buying it, and I'm so glad I did buy it. You get much thicker cards. You get card sleeves to go with them. It actually introduces a whole new range of characters as well. You've got the bishop, the assassin, the jester, to name but a few, and they allow for more players. So I believe it's 5 to 8 players to join in a game of Love Letter. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to play with that many people yet. Hopefully next month I'll be able to report on what that's like. It spruces up the game, and it's brought it back to my table, and I'm so glad it has. Its simplicity shines through, and there's something about it, and I can never pin it. It's that feeling of getting those two cards in front of you when you've drawn one up. You're like, I'm going to destroy you with these cards. An absolute classic is obviously the unstoppable hand of having a baron and a princess. You will never be stopped. that is a game that produces outcomes that are always so different, which again is great. So that was Love Letter. As I say, if you haven't played it, my goodness, you really, really need to. It's an absolute classic, and one that's, it's a tiny little packet game. It's dead simple. So make sure if you haven't played that, you do. Another game that's been on my table that is, I say a surprise, but it was no surprise it was going to be good, was Wildlands by Martin Wallace and published by Osprey Games. Many of you will know Martin Wallace for his games such as Brass, I believe it's Age of Steam. He's a veteran in the board game kind of designing world. And he's come out with this Wildlands game. And to begin with, I was a bit skeptical. I didn't know how it was going to play. Now, I unfortunately missed the chance to try this out at Tabletop Gaming Live, which I'm gutted about because I really wanted to try it. Either way, I didn't. So I was simply going off kind of the news and everything surrounding it. And Wildlands is it's a miniatures board game. You take on the role of one of the four factions, and these factions are rivals, and they each have their own unique deck of cards, and those cards are how the players interact with the factions, how they move across the board, their abilities. So one faction may have a focus on ranged attacks. Others will have a massive melee proficiency. And another faction may work really well as a team. Now, I have to say, having played it, it's really well balanced. It's really nicely balanced, actually. A lot of work has gone into that. But yeah, the aim of the game is to be the first to 5 points, and that's either by collecting gems that are scattered around the map or by killing other players' characters. Now, the gems are interestingly, the way they're placed, it's a really nice mechanic, actually. Each player starts with 10 numbered cards. Each card dictates a number, and that number is associated with a space on the board. And you select 5 of those cards to place under each of your characters, and that's going to be their starting space when you spawn them into the board, into the world. And the remaining 5 cards get passed to your left, and that's where the player to your left, that's where he or she is going to place their gems. So you can really, there's a lot of strategy goes into this game before it's even really started. You can set up ambushes around a certain gem. You can put the gems in the different corners of the board. I once had a fantastic hand where I could put 4 gems in each corner of the board. That was great. That was brilliant. I love that. And yeah, as soon as you've done that, gameplay begins, and you use these ability cards to move your characters across the board to fight with, and it plays really smoothly. The combat's really nice. You have the option to interrupt a player's turn, so if you're feeling like you've drawn a bad hand, you can interrupt and then do a counterattack straight away before the players even finish their go. There's different elements that work really well within this game. And having seen it online, I was a bit skeptical, but having played it, I love it. It's great. And the best thing is, my partner loves it too. And I didn't think she would. We tend to side with 2-player games because it is usually just the 2 of us playing. And we didn't know how well this would play 2 players. I have to say, I think it plays best as 2 players in a way. I feel if you have any more, it becomes a bit crowded. I know on Board Game Geek it says best played is 4 players, and I disagree. I think the board gets too crowded, and it's just a bit it gets a bit taxing in a way. But there we go. That's my opinion. Please don't judge me on that. But no, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, actually, see whether you agree with what I've said. And you go around the board, you try and get those 5 points, and the first 5 points wins. It's, again, fairly simple, but it's really good fun to play. So if you haven't tried that out, do try Wildlands. It's a really nice entry into this year by Martin Wallace. Definitely in my top 10 for this year so far. So another fairly new game that I've been playing a fair amount of is Downforce. Downforce from the from Aiello. Downforce is a F1 game. And rather naively, I compared that game to Formula D before even trying it, and I feel bad for doing so, because it's really not. It's nothing like it. And it's, yeah, there's a beauty to it, I think. But anyway, the game itself is designed by Wolfgang Kramer. There's also Rob DeVau, I think it is, and Justin Jacobson. And the game centers around kind of 3 separate kind of parts. The first being bidding, where you bid on the cars available, and whoever puts the best bid in wins the car. So you may end up with the majority of the cars at the end. It just depends how much you bid. So you bid for the cars, then you have the race, where you play cards to move the different all the cars forward. Now, these cards that you're playing, it's not just for the car that you've bid on. You're moving all the cards. I mean, there's some cards you can play that move all of the cards together. There's some that moves three or four at a time. But you may end up not backing your car. You may see that someone else has got the upper hand and you'll be backing them, which changes the game up a bit, which I quite like. So then, yeah, you have the race. And throughout the race, there is also another element, which is the betting. So you can bet on who the winner is going to be. And obviously the prize, the amount you get back from betting, there's three different points on the track where you bet. And obviously the more you get, more money for betting the winner from the outset rather than on the third point at which you're doing it. So... yeah, the cars race, and then the winner gets the most amount of money. The loser gets the least amount of money, and obviously that goes to the owner of the car. You then also add on however much money you've won from bets. You then minus the amount you bid on the cars, and the winner is the one with the most amount of money. Again, really nice concept. I like the idea of not just controlling one car. You have to be really strategic in how you play your cards. Play your cards right. Hey. But yeah, you really have to think. You can't just put out the high numbered, high space moving cards for your color, because you'll be moving the other cards as well. And if you run out of those, you'll be moving them one space at a time, but moving other ones much further later down the line, and that could benefit the other players. So you really have to. There's definitely an element, a real strategic element in this game, which I really like. And again, that's one that's been to the table a lot this month. I really enjoyed it, and it's definitely one that I'm going to be playing in the near future. So yeah, those are my kind of three main games that have kind of really come out being on the table a lot for me. And I guess I'm going to mention a game that I'm really excited about. And that has to be, really has to be Keyforge. Now, if you don't know what Keyforge is, where the devil have you been? Keyforge is a card game developed by, well, it's published by Fantasy Flight Games, and it's set to rival. I say rival. It's not taking on or rivaling any other games, but it's looking at a new way, a new kind of way of playing stuff like Magic the Gathering. So it's put its own unique spin on it. And of course, the designer of the game is Richard Garfield, who is, of course, famous co-creator of Magic the Gathering. And yeah, I'm really excited for it. I never really got into Magic myself. I was very late to the party when Magic the Gathering, I think it started well before my time, I believe. I think it was 1993 it started. So that was 3 years before I was even born. So I was well behind by the time I was of an age that I could play it. So, I mean, I grew up with a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh, but the main one was Pokemon, the Pokemon trading card game. That was my life for a good few years. I really enjoyed that. But the trouble with that is you had to build your deck, and my parents weren't very forthcoming when I asked for money to buy Pokemon cards. So I kind of had to stick with the bog standard, you know, starter set ones, which never got me very far when playing amongst other people. And yeah, I guess that was a downside, and that turned me off a bit, really, because I was just getting absolutely thrashed by the people who'd spent hundreds of pounds getting all these booster packs. So yeah, I won the occasional one, but I wasn't very good. And there was that massive deck building element. So if you could build a good deck and you had the good cards, you were always going to win. And I don't see that as being fair. At least I wouldn't get any ratification or any kind of thrill out of that. Keyforge wants to challenge that. So if you haven't heard of it, or you're not entirely sure if you've heard of it and don't know what it's about, basically you have these unique decks. And when I say unique, I really mean unique. They are as unique as you can get. There is no deck that is the same. So each deck will have a name. It will have its own logo, symbol, and these are unique. And I believe with all the cards that they have and all the information, etc., there are over 104 quadrillion possible decks. Now, as much as I want to believe that, they have mentioned the fact that there is an algorithm that they do run behind the scenes that obviously makes sure that the decks meet a certain criteria. But yeah, either way, that deck is then, whichever one you get, that is the deck. You cannot change it. You cannot swap out cards. What you see is what you get. And that is fascinating and really exciting in my eyes. So one of the big things they're doing at the moment, because it's due to be released tomorrow, in fact, I'm recording this on the 14th of November, so Thursday the 15th of November it's released, and a lot of local game stores are running events where you will literally pay your entrance fee, you'll sit down at a table, you'll be given a box deck that's never been opened, you open it up, you look at the cards, and then you play. So you don't even know what you're going to be playing with. That is really exciting. They've done it previously with Magic, etc., where they'll give you a booster set. You'd open it up, you'd have a brief look, you'd change some cards out. There's an element, a small element of deck building, and then you'd play. This completely eliminates it. You cannot deck build with Keyforge. And yeah, there are going to be those decks that are better. They have said there is an element of balancing. How true that is, I don't know. It kind of says to me that actually it's not as random as it could be. But yeah, that concept is great. So I guess, how does Keyforge, how does it play? So there are seven races within Keyforge, and each deck will have three of those races. With those three, you can choose which race to play each go. You can only play cards that associate to those that race. I believe I say race, I should really say houses. So the houses of the Crucible, as they call them, there are seven of them. So there is Brobnar, Mars, Sanctum, Logos, Dis, Shadows, and Untamed. So with those, you obviously, as I say, each deck has three of those houses that make up that deck. And you have to fight to get amber. And that amber is then used to create keys. The keys then used to open a vault and to gain the incredible knowledge of the vault and everything that is set inside that. So it's looking similar. When I first saw it, I compared it very much to Hearthstone from Blizzard Games. I played that a lot online, but that's kind of the biggest similarity I can pull from it. But it's a completely unique experience, and I'm really looking forward to it. I have pre-ordered it. I will be getting it tomorrow. Unfortunately, I did try and get it from Heifer's Games. And needless to say, they ran out fairly swiftly before I could even get a look in. So yeah, that will be arriving tomorrow, and I'm really excited to see how it plays, what sort of deck I get, really, because you have no idea. That is your deck then. That's it. That's what you play with. Obviously, you can have more, but yeah, that will be interesting. So yeah, that's Keyforge. So obviously you can get the decks, they're sold separately. So they're, I think, about £7 or $10 if you're in the US, a go. And you can also get the starter set, which has been incredibly popular. That's been around £30-35. So that has two starter decks that are the same across the board. Everyone gets those two starter decks. You then get two unique decks within there. You get the rules, and you also get the kind of the tokens that you need, so the amber, the keys, which I think is quite nice to have. I've also purchased the two-player game mat. You don't need it, it's not necessary, but you know, it looks quite cool. So yeah, really looking forward to trying that out. Do check my website and do check Instagram, because I'll be posting a lot on there. So do make sure you have a look. So yeah, I guess that's it. We've spoken a lot. I started this podcast thinking, how am I going to fill these minutes? And I tell you what, they do go by quickly. It's amazing how quickly it does go by. But I've really enjoyed it, and I hope you have too. As I say, I do welcome feedback, so do pop an email across to me at contact@honestmeeple.co.uk, or by all means pop a message on Instagram. I'm not one of these who ignores their messages on Instagram. If you want to message me, feel free. I will try my best to reply. So yeah, give me some feedback, give me some ideas, whatever you want. Just pop it over and I'll be sure to read it. So as I say, guys, I hope you've enjoyed it. Do tune in for the next podcast, where I'm going to talk about kind of how, why I board game in particular, and what kind of draws me into the hobby, what I enjoy playing. So we'll go through some of my favorite games as well. And of course I'll do a feature, perhaps look at my game of the month. But as I say, if you've got any suggestions, please feel free to drop me a line. So yeah, thank you very much, guys, for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I will hopefully speak to you all, and you'll be listening to me very soon. All right, thank you very much.